Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle Years podcast. There's no programming notes or special announcements up front, so let's go ahead and dive on in. Whether you're an entrepreneur or you're just a side hustler, you know that there's going to be ebbs and flows, hills and valleys, times where it seems like everything is going right, you can't do anything wrong, and you're making bank. And other times where it seems like everything is falling apart and you're wondering, is this it? Is this what's going to wipe me out? And during those times where you're in the valley and everything's going wrong and falling apart, you start wondering, is it really worth it? Should I just give up? I mean, if you're a side hustler, you're talking about going in to work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and then you're coming in and putting another 10, 20 hours a week into your side hustle, building up the extra income. And you're wondering, is it worth it versus being able to just go through and get home, relax, watch some TV, play with the kids, spend time with your wife, so on and so forth. You're wondering, is that all that extra hard work really worth it? And I know this is something that has come across with me and my wife, where every time we hit the valley, we start wondering, oh my God, is this what's going to wipe us out? And, you know, is this the end of it? And the frustration. And luckily, we pushed through it, and we were able to get back to the point where everything is going great. And this is especially true if you're dealing with one of your side hustles. Now, I got multiple side hustles. I got podcasts, not so much this podcast. I haven't put a whole lot into this podcast. I understand that. But I got other podcasts in which I'm putting out content every single day. And it's a mix of video content, audio content, written content, as well as some other things. But on this episode, I'm going to talk about the side hustle that we got going on with eBay and Facebook and our online sales. And when it comes to the retail sales, we like to engage in arbitrage. Now, I know a lot of times it's stated as retail arbitrage, but it's not really just stuck to retail businesses. That's where it started, but that's not where we stayed at. We expanded beyond just the retail arbitrage space. And so when it comes to the retail arbitrage, finding a steady flow of products that you can make a profit from can be hard. There are going to be times where you're going to be able to find lots of products that you're able to make bank off of. And then there's going to be times where you can't find anything. Now, the hill and valley of the retail arbitrage may be dependent on where you live. The bigger the area, the more stores you have, the more likely you are to be able to find the arbitrage ability. Now, when me and my wife, we first started in the retail arbitrage space as one of our side hustles, one of our favorite places to go to find great deals, great clearance item deals, was Kmart. Oh yes, Kmart. Some of you are like, but they're no longer around. Well, I mean, they're still around in some areas, but they closed a lot of stores. And so when they were around in my area, we were able to go there, find stuff on clearance, and then sell it online for triple what we paid for. Kmart was our favorite spot. And then what happened? Kmart decided it was going to close a lot of stores, and it closed the store in our area and in all the areas that we would travel to. And so it started off great. Everything was working. Then a decision that was made, not by us, but outside of our control, what seemed like it was wiping us out. We could no longer do it. And we were wondering, okay, what are we going to do to recover? Because this was doing great. And then we thought, okay, Alibaba and AliExpress. And we were wondering, okay, what is it that we could do? Now, we made a mistake with Alibaba and AliExpress in ordering products. We were just thinking, okay, products are, you know, any product would do. And we were thinking, okay, you know what? We're going to do DVDs and movies. Now, we were new to this at the time. And what we had found out is that, well, movies and DVDs off of Alibaba, not a good idea. Now, we ended up getting banned initially on eBay, not completely, but for the movies and DVDs, because it turned out the movies and DVDs from Alibaba were counterfeit. Now, at first, boom, those things were selling like hotcakes. We were able to sell and make a lot of money. We didn't realize that they were not legitimate, that they were just counterfeit. We trusted that, hey, if this is on Alibaba, this is going to be a legitimate item. We're going to be able to go through and get the products real cheaply and be able to resell it. So this is one of our initial mistakes very early on, realizing that we need to do more due diligence in our research to make sure that what we get is a legitimate product. And as we learn that, we learn to do more research when it comes to Alibaba and AliExpress on the products. The first time that we go through to buy a product to resell off of Alibaba and AliExpress, we don't buy much in quantity. We buy the very bare minimum quantity. And we realize that we're not going to get our money back on that, or at least that is the initial thought, because we're just getting it in order to inspect the product, to go through, make sure it meets up to quality, make sure it functions right, does what it's supposed to do. The first batch that we order is us going through and kind of testing out the quality control. So let's say we order 10 or we order 100. We go through and that 10 or 100 is just wasted money. But we go through and we try to find out of that batch, how many defects are there? What is the build quality? Are these legitimate products? Or are these products that are complete ripoffs that are going to get us banned from being able to sell that particular product? Now, with eBay, if one account gets banned, let's say it's my account, then just moving, if you move and you sign up under your spouse, you can get back in, but you just got to understand. So Alibaba, was working good until it wasn't. Again, we were getting knocked back down, but then we learned from our mistakes and how to do more due diligence in our research on the product. Now, Alibaba and AliExpress does become a mainstay of our selling strategy, but we still engage in the retail arbitrage space, or I should just say the arbitrage space. Now, traditionally, my wife and I had focused on our arbitrage efforts on new products, things where we go to retailers like Walmart, Kmart, Target, and all the other stores in the area. And we would be just looking at items that are on clearance sale, where we think that based off of the clearance price, let's say it's 40% off, could we resell that and make a good profit? Now, we still do that to some degree, but we don't limit it there. We just don't limit it to the retail arbitrage space, and we don't limit it to Alibaba and AliExpress. However, I will say that if you're going to do the retail arbitrage, it is getting harder. Especially after the COVID lockdowns and now inflation and the getting greater efficiencies at supply and demand, where finding stuff that is on clearance, good stuff on clearance that you're going to be able to go through and make a good profit off of, it is getting harder. And so there were times that where we were going through and we could spend days, maybe even weeks, going around store after store after store and not really be able to find much. It seems like we were starting to lose money just on the gas it took to search around. And so we had to get smarter on our arbitrage and how we go about it. Now, if we go through and take a look at retail arbitrage, we still use that to some degree, but that is not the bulk of our products anymore, just because it's so hard to find good clearance item deals. And of course, you see the stores that go off and put stuff in the clearance aisle, market as on clearance, and yet it's not actually on clearance. They just think if they put that sticker on there that says clearance and put it in the clearance aisle, you'll think you're getting a good deal when in fact it's still at full retail price. Now, you can still buy things at full retail price and be able to make a profit. If you live in an area such as, say, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, all right, let's say you live around that area and you buy something at full retail value, what you're buying could still be cheaper than what that same product would cost, even with that same chain of stores, like Walmart, could still be cheaper than, say, California, New York, for example. All right? Because when it comes to the retail arbitrage, what we learned is that prices are not fixed nationwide within that store. It can be regionally priced, where different locations charge different prices. And so you can still make some money off of that. You just have to be willing to go through and put in the research of what is this selling on average online. Of course, some people spend more money buying stuff and something online than they would if they would just take the little trip to the store in order to get what it is that they need. So you got to think, what would people want? What would they be willing to pay a little bit extra on if it means saving them a trip to the store? And so you can go through and you can take a look at doing that. And when you go through and you take a look at the retail arbitrage space itself, it's getting harder. It's getting harder to find good profits. I mean, you can still go through and make, you know, $1, $2, maybe $3 off of a product, maybe. You know, but if you're going to go in the retail arbitrage space, what you're going to end up finding is that you're going to have to do a lot of work for a lot of slim profit. You know, you're going to be taking a look at what retailers do. A lot of bulk sales, very little profits per unit is what you're going to go through. I mean, that's on average, but you can still find some good deals. But if you're just focused on the retail arbitrage, you're going to find yourself frustrated, spinning your wheels and not finding enough product. You know, and there's market forces that are in there, you know, greater supply chain efficiency, supply and demand, the ups and downs of the economy. But also, one of the things that would be eating into your profits is there's so much competition in the retail arbitrage space. I mean, retail arbitrage is not anything that's new. It's been around for a while, and a lot of people have caught on to it. So if you're going off and you're in an area where there are other people doing retail arbitrage, it's going to be even harder to find the good deals because you're going to have to be getting up earlier and earlier and earlier. You're going to have to be going to the stores, you know, every day or twice a day even to try and find the good items that have just hit clearance before the other retail arbitrage people are doing that. Plus, the added competition is driving down prices. You know, it's eating up the supply, but the online competition is driving down prices, which is driving down profits. And this is natural. Anything that works, anything that people are able to make a lot of money off of, other people are going to catch on. And as more people catch on, the more competition there is, the more prices drop, and the less profits you're going to get per unit that you're able to find. And that's assuming that you're going to be able to put in all the time and effort to be able to find it. But does that mean arbitrage is dead altogether? No. You just got to be smarter than your competition about it. And if your spouse is involved in your side hustle, then you also got to be willing to divvy up the labor based off of your natural tendencies, what you like and don't like. There are parts of the side hustle that I really love and enjoy and things that I don't. My wife, she has things that she loves and enjoys doing and things that she doesn't. So we split it up in order to try and match what it is we have the most passion for. For instance, me, I'm really good at finding the opportunities, the places that we can go in order to source products. However, she is much better at doing the actually going there and getting the products. Why? While I'm good at finding the opportunities, finding out where places are that have great deals, I do not enjoy shopping. And that's a lot of what retail arbitrage is shopping. I'm the type of person that when I go to a place, I know exactly what I want to get. I get in, grab it, get out in the shortest time possible. She enjoys spending hours just walking around the stores, looking at every little item. And so when it comes down to it, I find the good opportunities. I make the initial visit to make sure that there's a lot of good stuff there. And then I send her there where she gets to enjoy doing one of her favorite activities, shopping. She gets to go around and slowly walk through the aisles, taking an assessment of every little thing there. And then going through and finding the items that have great value. So when it comes through and taking a look at being smarter than your competition, while your competition is going off and focusing on, say, just the clearance aisle of the major retail stores, what have I done? Well, beyond Alibaba, I also found out that Facebook, the marketplace, is a great place in order to be able to find products. The people who are listing stuff there, not hoping to make money, not hoping to do things as a side hustle, but just because they want to get rid of stuff. And so they'll just list stuff dirt cheap, and just because they want to get rid of it, maybe get a few dollars out of it, but they don't do any research as to what it's worth. And we're able to scroll through, find great items, and then go get it. And then after we buy it on Facebook, some of the stuff we relist on Facebook for higher profits, or we go through off of what we get on Facebook, used items, and resell it on eBay for good profits. Now, the usefulness of Facebook, it can be dependent on where you live. For instance, if you live in a really small town, maybe Facebook is not going to provide you all the great opportunities. If you live in a big city, you might be able to find a lot of great opportunities. Or if, like me, you live in a university town, let's say, you know, you have a medium-sized, you know, city, or maybe a smaller city, you know, bigger than a town, but not really a big city. But there is a university right there where you're at. Those college kids, they toss so much out. I mean, they'll go through, they'll put things out on the curb, you know, free on the curb. If you live in a university area, you know what I'm talking about. Where the rule is, pretty much, if it's on the curb, that means it's free to take. And so what they'll do is they'll just put a whole bunch of stuff on the curb, mark it as free, put it on the Facebook marketplace, say first come, first serve. And with that, you're going to be able to go through and you're going to be able to find a lot of stuff for free that you're then going to be able to go through and resell and make a profit. Because these college kids, as smart as they are, don't know what it's worth. They don't care. They're just looking to get rid of it, especially considering that most of them are renters. And was during the time when their lease, you know, is up and it's time for them to move, they're not thinking about making a profit. They're just thinking, okay, I can't haul this to my next location. My next unit is going to be smaller. Or, hey, I'm going home for the summer and I can't store all this stuff at my parents' house. And so I'm not looking to make a profit. I'm looking to get rid of it, put it on the curb, put it up on Facebook. Voila. And they throw out a lot of good items. Heck, they even throw out good game systems and good games that are dirt cheap that you can make a good profit off of. But it's not just the college student. There are people all over the place who are just looking to get rid of stuff just to get rid of it. They're not looking at it for money. And so you get a lot of great opportunities on the Facebook marketplace. And even if they are charging some money, you can negotiate it down to a great price because their objective for a lot of people on the Facebook marketplace is not about profits, money, or side hustle. It's just about getting rid of stuff. They treat it like a garage sale. They just want to get rid of it. So the Facebook marketplace has been a great place to do arbitrage because you don't just do arbitrage on new in-the-box items. You can do arbitrage on used items, previously owned items. And just like Facebook, garage sales and yard sales are a great place in order to arbitrage, to be able to go through, buy something dirt cheap, and then relist it on eBay or relist it on Facebook. You know, so you can go through the marketplace and just look for yard sales or garage sales. And these can be great areas in which you can find stuff that is really good in order to resell. So you got the opportunities of the Facebook marketplace, you got the opportunities of the yard sales and the garage sales. But there are other places where you can find great opportunities. At least I have found the great opportunity there, did the initial assessment, said, yes, this would be a good place in order to get stuff, and then send my wife there who enjoys spending hours at these places. Now, another place that we have found to be a gold mine for your arbitrage, especially if you're going off and you're arbitraging used items, are consignment stores and surplus stores. Yes. We got those in our area as well. I understand they're not going to be available everywhere. So we've been going through, we see some consignment stores. We even have stores where people just donate their stuff to, and then this stuff gets sold very cheaply to the general public, you know, and there is a gold mine there as far as the consignment and stores that just take donations and resell it dirt cheap. And so we have a couple of locations for that where we live. And so it's called Overflow in our area. People go down there, they donate their used stuff to that they just want to get rid of. And then they go through, they market dirt cheap for sale. I mean, they're pretty much getting the items for free. And so they just go through and put up, you know, a price set to move the item quickly. And so we're able to go through there. We're able to find, you know, big furniture items that we could resell on Facebook, you know, and have them come pick it up. We can find golf clubs. We can find all types of gems at places like Overflow, especially toys. I mean, seriously, we were able to go off and find toy items, especially even rare toys. You know, and so we have found some toy sets where people had, you know, a very popular TV show, something about vampires or whatever. And there was this whole collection, you know, high school that was with it that unfolded, all the clothes, the stand up, you know, things that you put it into for it to stand up the dolls, you know, all types of accessories and all of that. We were able to get that. And we spent like maybe $5 on all of that. And we were able to resell it all, you know, in a lot for over $100. That's 20 times our money back, just because you can't find these toys anywhere else. And this was a massive treasure trove related to that specific item. And we're able to find these all the time when it comes to the toys of these Overflows and consignment stores and all of that. People just tossing out toys, not realizing what they're worth because they're not interested in getting into all of the online sales. We get them dirt cheap and we're able to get triple, quadruple, you know, up to 20 times our money back on this. And there's a lot of places, you know, in our area in which we can find those type of deals with consignment stores and stores that sell off what people are just donating to them. But then we also have another type of store where we were able to go off and find great deals. Again, if you live in a university area, an area that has a university, all right, beyond just the college kids tossing things out, what you also need to realize is that these universities, they're constantly changing over stuff. They're changing equipment. They're changing supplies. They're changing all types of stuff out. And so your area, if you live in a place that has a university, may have a surplus store for that university where they are selling off all the stuff that they are replacing. And you can find good items that are dirt cheap. I mean, we, beyond just what it is that we go through and we take a look at selling online, we're able to find stuff just for ourselves. That's where we found computers for our kids. Now, we homeschool our kids. And they're at the elementary level, so it's not like they need, you know, big, massive gaming computers to handle video editing, audio editing, computer programming. No. They just need a basic school computer that allows them to run Microsoft Office, do stuff researching online on the internet, and to just complete their class assignment. So we were able to go down there and pick up a couple of good computers. You know, they have Windows 10 on them, and we were able to get them for $50. So you can also take a look at these places, not just for resale, but for how to save yourself money in getting the stuff that you want. Now, there's a lot of stuff at the surplus store that we get conflicted about between whether we want to sell it or whether we want to keep it. I mean, you're talking about beakers and microscopes, and if you homeschool your kids, you're thinking, okay, I can make a lot of money on this online, selling to other homeschools, or I can keep it because I'm going to need it for my homeschool, you know? So we got a little bit of that going on and everything, but we're also able to find a lot of really good deals to resell. And, you know, office coffee makers where you can make several pots. Now, I argued with my wife that we need to keep that for ourselves. You know, we go through a lot of coffee in my household between me and my wife. I'm a huge coffee drinker. I can drink coffee all day, every day. Probably not the healthiest thing, I understand. But I was thinking we need a coffee maker, like an office coffee maker, where it has four different coffee pot holders and just make it all at once so the coffee continues to flow. And of course, at the surplus store, you understand that the universities also have dining halls and they go through and they get rid of a lot of cookware that they want to go through. I mean, we're talking about, you know, big professional pizza makers, bread makers, and all that stuff that is also very cheap that you can go off and resell. And you can still make a great profit even after the shipping cost. And the shipping cost is, you know, some of that shipping cost is enough to give you a heart attack, but luckily you're still making a great profit off of it. I tell you, I'm kicking myself in the butt right now because there was one item that I saw the last time that I was at the surplus store. Because sometimes I go down to the surplus store just for electronics, you know, just for myself. And I saw an item and it was like, oh man, I was so tempted to get it, but I didn't know how I would get it home. And I wasn't sure how I would be able to ship it. And so here it is. It's the university surplus store. And they're getting rid of a smart board. A smart board. I'm not sure if you know what a smart board is, but if you've been at a university, you understand what it is. If you're younger and you've been at a university, they've been around for a couple of decades now. But anyways, there was a smart board. And of course, they have the projectors for the smart board as well. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, you know, that would be pretty cool to get set up in our homeschool area and be able to use that in our own home learning environment. And then I look at the price and I'm like, holy crap, I could resell this because they're selling this smart board, even though it's used, at $250. But in the few smart boards that I saw on eBay real quickly, they were selling for $1,500 to $2,000 yet. And it's like, wow, I could make about 5 times my money back, you know, or closer to 10 times, you know, between 5 to 10 times of my money back if I bought this and resold it. Or it could be really cool for our homeschool. The problem is a smart board is kind of big and I had no way to transport it. I had no way to be able to go off and transport. Now, I saw a smart board on eBay going for nearly $2,500 on the completed listing, and it was used. And it's like, wow, you know, either now I haven't done to figure out what it all cost brand new, you know, but I know that's what at least one person sold it. And even if I figured out how to get it home, I don't know how I would go about shipping. I don't have a box for it. You know, now, yes, I could probably do it, you know, UPS or FedEx, you know, for shipping. I understand that, but I don't have a box for it. So I would be able, so I'd have to find some way to package it up so it wouldn't get damaged and then get it shipped off. But the main problem is I had no way to be able to get it home, but I could have made a killing off of that. And then I took a look and there's all types of projectors, you know, projectors that are used in the classroom to display what's on the computer screen and videos and all of that in the classroom. And these are projectors of all sizes. And I see that, you know, stores like Walmart are now selling, you know, miniaturized projectors, you know, project what's on your cell phone. So I know that there's room to be able to sell this. And I'm looking at all these projectors and I'm able to see that, yes, I could make a profit off of them. And so a surplus store, whether it's a university surplus or any other type of surplus store, are a great place to be able to go through, find used items, and then be able to resell them for great profits. I mean, this is one of the things that me and my wife do. And we're able to have a more consistent and steady good times because we did this. When we were just sticking to the big box retailers, finding good deals were hard. It was very intensive. We were constantly spending a lot of time. You know, my wife could spend most of her days just going store to store to store and not find anything. But adding in the consignment stores, adding in the stores that take donations to sell, and adding in the surplus stores, as well as looking through Facebook for things that we could get off of Facebook and resell on eBay, has given us a more consistent and steady supply of items for us to be able to go through and get consistent income off of. And that has been great for us because all day, every day, all we hear, on either our tablets or our phones is the eBay going cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And that is a very motivating sound. Now, I've alluded to this previously, but me and my wife, we are a perfect complement to each other in our side hustle as far as the things that she likes to do and doesn't like to do, and the things that I like and don't like to do. So I've already alluded that I am great at being able to do the research and finding the places where we can find great deals and a consistent source of products that we can make good money off of. And she enjoys the going to the store, browsing around, spending hours there, and coming home with a minivan packed to the brim of stuff for us to sell. But it goes even beyond that. So one of the things that we go through and take a look at is the bookkeeping. She hates doing the accounting work, keeping track of the profit and loss, the cash flow, and all of that. But I enjoy that. I enjoy going through and doing the bookkeeping and keeping a constant eye on the profit and loss, because I love seeing those profits grow and grow and grow. And then when we have our monthly meeting where we go over, here's how we did this month, the only thing that she really cares about is taking a look at the profit margin and just taking a look over the current month's profits versus the last month's profit. That's all she cares about when it comes to the accounting work. And even then, she doesn't really care too much. All she cares about is, was the bank account bigger or smaller? But if we just bought a whole bunch of products, it's going to look like it's smaller, which can be demotivating, which is why I go through and I make sure that we do the accounting. Plus, you know, for tax purposes, we have to do the accounting, but I go through and I make sure that she sees, you know, the sales. You know, here's what we spent, here's what we made, here's our net profit. And then there's other things as well, such as listing the stuff on eBay. Me, I find it tedious to be going through, taking the pictures, doing the descriptions, and all of that. But luckily, she really enjoys that. She's got a whole area, you know, set up in a corner, you know, to make really good pictures. She's got the lighting just right to reduce or eliminate shadows altogether. We got the, you know, table that she takes the pictures on, you know, a nice sheet that covers up the wall that she can go through and then make really good quality pictures. And she enjoys doing the copywriting. She's more imaginative and doing the copywriting than I am. I find that to be kind of tedious. And so we go through and we're able to keep the division of labor going. And then, of course, we get to some of the funner discussion over what to do with all that profit that we are making. And so we go through when I'm doing the bookkeeping. I also go through and kind of put together a preliminary budget for the business, you know, never risking too much money, you know, where if we end up getting a bunch of stuff that for some reason stop being hot or stop selling, you know, it would not devastate us if that happened. But I like to go through and actually plan out what it is we're going to do with the profit, you know, how much of the profits we're going to keep in the business in order to continue growing the business, so that we can continue to buy more and more product. But then there are some other stuff that we do with the profits in order to continue to get even more money. So some of the profits, while reinvested in the business, other profits go into other investments. So for instance, we have our kids set up with mutual funds under an UGMA account. And so we take some of the monthly profits and we're investing in our kids' future. We're putting it into their investments, into their mutual funds, so that they have more money. Right now, my kids, each one of them, I have three kids, each one of them right now, and I have one from that would be based off of age going into fifth grade, all the way down to preschooler. And each one of them has more money now than what I had upon turning 18 from what my parents saved up for me. And their money is continuing to grow. It's been great. So we got that. Then there is the investment for me and my wife, you know, putting aside some money into retirement accounts and then other investments, general investing, to be able to save up for larger purchases that we want to make down the road. And so when it comes to that, while I go through and I got the mutual funds picked out, set up, you know, what investment firms for the kids, when it comes to our money, or outside of our retirement, I do the research on the ETFs, the stocks, the bonds, cryptocurrency, and I go through And in case you were wondering what I do while she's spending hours upon hours at the store, this is one of the things that I do, is I'm taking that time to do research in the market, you know, taking a look at doing trades. And I like doing swing trades. That is where I'm able to make good, steady income from as well. And so I will do nice little swing trades. And ever since the what happened with GameStop earlier this year, I'm keeping my eye on that Reddit group and taking a look at, you know, what items are going to have big, massive booms again. And so I'm going through and I'm taking a look. So we reinvest some of the profits into the business to grow the business even more so we can continue to make more and more money. We invest in our kids' future and their mutual funds. We invest in our retirement, and then we do some general investing. One of the things that my wife has mentioned recently is we need an upgrade to our home so that we can have even more space in order to hold inventory so that we can sell even more stuff. Okay. Plus, she would like an upgrade in a home so that we can have rooms that are dedicated strictly to our homeschooling rather than using one space that is used as a homeschool / second living room / play area. I understand that. And so part of our general investing is that we're now taking profits from our business, putting it into the investments, making more money in the stock market in order to finance upgrading our home without taking out debt. And that is one of the big things for us, no debt. And so when we take a look at, you know, the day jobs that we've had along with the side hustles and then taking the side hustles more onto the, you know, full-time entrepreneurial journey, it's been very important to us to remain debt-free. So it lowers how much profits we need to make in order to meet our basic household needs and be able to continue growing the business. The more debt you have, the more people that have claim to your money before you even make it, and the more profits you have to make. So being debt-free has been great. And then doing this to try and finance a home debt-free without a mortgage, that is where we're going through and we're taking a look at long-term investments or doing upgrades, you know, adding on, building on to a home, which, you know, if you're taking a look at it, adding on to a home is a lot cheaper than going off and buying a new home. But your ability to add on to the home depends on where you live. Do you have a lot where you live that allows you to add on? If you live out in the countryside, sure. Yes, it's easy to do add-ons. I mean, you have a, you know, an acre, you have 5 acres, you know, whatever it is, you can add on to the home. If you live in a standard, you know, city lot, you know, in the heart of the city, you may not have as much space to be able to add on. And so me and my wife, though, for the majority of our time, have been keeping up with just wanting to rent. We want to be able to have the flexibility to be able to just pick up and leave as opportunities arise. And I was saying that I want to do that for the first half of our career, which would be until we're 45. But with that said, things have been changing. And so we're taking a look at, okay, maybe instead of that plan, we're going to go ahead and buy, just get a house because we have been in the same area for a while. We like it. We don't want to move. And if we just pay cash for a house, if we do end up moving, it's not like we're going to have 2 mortgage payments that we're going to have to pay, or mortgage and a rent payment, because the house will have been bought debt and debt free without a mortgage. So it would also be easier to sell if we had to. So we've gone through and we've recognized the changes there. But that is where our long-term investing over the years has given us the option to change up our plans and to go through and take a look at getting stuff debt-free, you know, and remaining debt-free. So yeah, you know, go through, build it up, and reinvest in the business, but also take some of the money to invest outside of the business and the stock market and your kids' funds and your retirement funds, all of that, and you can do really well. But no, it hasn't been all rainbows and sunshine for us, especially in the beginning, where we were making a lot of mistakes. And there are going to be times as you go through all of this that you are going to get frustrated. You're going to feel like, oh, this just isn't working, you know, and you're going to be tempted to give up. There have been times over the years when me and my wife had almost given up completely. You know, we had been knocked down, and we had been knocked down repeatedly because of mistakes that we had made. You know, I'm not going to make excuses for that. But we had been knocked down repeatedly, and there were times where we felt like just giving up, that we're spinning our wheels, and while we'll make some steps forward, we get knocked back down. And that's going to happen, especially in the beginning. But whether or not you stay with it is going to be up to you and your resilience. Because had we given up early on while we were constantly getting knocked back down and everything, we wouldn't be where we are today. We wouldn't be where we are today. Now, for some of you, though, maybe the situation is reversed, where you never gave up and your situation just keeps getting worse. Look, you're going to have to make the call for yourself based off of what's going on in your individual life, the conditions and the area you're at, and your skill set. But just giving up should not be an option. If anything, from those of us who have been through, you know, the crash back in 2008, or what just happened as a result of a global pandemic, those of us who have been through that, the ups and downs, knows that gone are the days when you could just rely on a day job, where you just get up, go to a 9-to-5, put in your 40 to 60 hours a week, come home and relax, and as long as you go in and do the work, you're safe, right? We know that is not going to be the case. You know, there are market crashes, global pandemics, changes in the markets, you know, from booming economies to recessions, and changes in reorganizing the business as they right size and reallocate resources. Job security is a thing of the past. And so you can't just rely on one stream of income, or you can't just rely on both you and your spouse having a 9-to-5, calling it two streams of income, and think that you're safe. That is not the case here. You always got to be going through and trying to find your multiple streams of income. Whether your multiple streams is online sales, whether you're using services online where you create designs for shirts, t-shirts, and mugs, and those designs sell, whether you self-publish books, YouTube podcasts, you know, live streaming video gameplay, you got to take an assessment of your talents and ability. Could you live stream video games? Sure, anybody can do that. But are you good at those video games? You know, or do you die a lot? And if you die a lot, are you at least good that you could spend 2, 3, 4 hours a day playing video games and talking and keeping it entertaining? Or can you do like the Corey Kinchin model, where you play the games, you record, and then you do a lot of editing to cut it down and just make it very entertaining while giving a highlight of what the game is about? All right. You can do all this stuff, but does it mean it's going to be great for you? Because there's a lot of people doing all of the things that are available, but not everybody has the talent. I could do video games. I can play video games all day. But do I have the talent to make it interesting enough for other people to want to watch? Can I talk? Should I not talk? I don't know. For me, I don't think video game plays is in my natural talent as far as money-making opportunities. I still enjoy playing the video games just for fun, but live streaming or trying to make a side hustle out of it, I'm not very good at. I mean, I'll still put a little bit of effort into it, but it's not like it's generating much for me. But I make a very little, if anything, off of it, but I enjoy it. It's a hobby. It's something I do for relaxation. So you got to go through when taking a look at all the things that you could do to add a little extra money and generate a bunch of different flows of income, and figure out what you can do based off of your talent, off of your ability, and what you will stick to. You can't just rely on one stream of income anymore. If your only source of income is a 9-to-5, you know, for you, and 9-to-5 for your spouse, you are setting yourself up for some hard time. Now, if you're going to do that, though, because you're not going to do anything, there are definitely some recommendations, you know, on the personal finance side, emergency fund side, but also in trying to constantly build up your network, people that you know, people that you engage in, keeping your portfolio up to date, you know, utilizing LinkedIn and making sure that if something happened to your job, you got the connections, the experience, and the inside track in order to get ahead of the competition to be able to land another job real quickly, as well as having the finances to get you through your period of unemployment. All right, but that in itself is still very risky. So you need to take a look at what it is that you can do. You know, services, whether that's as simple as driving for Uber and Lyft. I think there are some places where you can easily do remote work for some bookkeeping, you know, Fiverr, you know, a lot of stuff to mystery shopping. You know, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff that you can do to add in or pad on to your income that you need to be taking a look at. But in building up multiple streams of income doesn't mean that you have to automatically be an entrepreneur and do entrepreneurial work with your side hustle. Your side hustle could just be filling services for other people. I believe there's even a place where you can make, I don't know, $20 an hour just to help other people learn language. You know, if you speak English, people from other countries are part of a service to try and learn English. And part of learning English is to engage in conversations with people. And so there are companies looking for someone to just sit at home on their computer and have conversations with people so that they can practice their English. And it could pay anywhere from $15 to $20 an hour. That is an option. It doesn't have to be entrepreneurial work. It could be contract work. It could be, you know, as you know, an employee for somebody else. There's a lot of options. The main point is you need to have multiple streams of income. And then with that multiple streams of income, you try to live off of your 9-to-5 if you have one. And then you take all the money you're making from other sources and you put that into managing your finances to pay off debt through the debt snowball. And then once you're out of debt, you use that those other streams of income in order to finance your retirement account and your general investing account if you're not interested in the entrepreneurial landscape, right? You go through and you just reinvest it to build up as much money as possible. Because let's face it, if you're relatively young or maybe even middle age at this point, you can't rely on the government and Social Security to take care of you. Have you seen this? And as part of investing, maybe investing in foreign currencies isn't a bad idea at this point because of the dumb shit who are destroying the value of our currency, making all the same mistakes as every other place where economies have collapsed. But that gets into politics. So all of this is to say that you got to have multiple streams of income. You got to be able to plan out how to use that money to get yourself out of debt and invest for your future. And when it comes to the examples that I've given here about arbitrage, don't just stick to the big box retailers in the clearance aisle. Go through and search for ways in which you can arbitrage used items even and get creative about all the different places, Facebook, consignment stores, surplus stores, yard sales, garage sales, all of that. And if you're married, get together and divvy up based off of your natural talents, likes and dislikes, what aspects of the business you're going to do, what aspects of the business they're going to do, and work together. Now, we do all of this, and you know, side hustles, main hustles, the 9-to-5 we have done, and we do all of that on top of the fact that we homeschool our kids. So they're not gone for 7-8 hours a day. No. So managing your calendar and being able to organize everything. So we homeschool. So we even divvy up the homeschool where there are some classes I teach, some classes she teaches. And so with that, while I'm leading certain classes and lessons, she's over here. Well, I know you can't see over here, but she's over in her area getting things cleaned up and listed on eBay. And while she's doing the lessons for the classes that she leads, I'm doing the bookkeeping. I'm doing, you know, the research and opportunities. I'm taking a look at the stock market. And then once the homeschool is done for the day, we go through and she goes out to the stores and I start putting together things that I'm going to do for my various podcasts, YouTube channels, or just spend a little bit of time with the kid. We go through it. There are days where it seems like we are constantly busy and on the move all day, every day, but we get it done because we have clear goals and clear directions and we get creative. And taking a look at the profit and loss and hearing cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching all day long is also very motivating. And when you're motivated, you tend to get a lot done. All right, so that's it for this episode. I'd like to thank you so much for listening in. Don't forget to subscribe if this is your first time listening. I am trying to make more time to invest more into this podcast. All right, also, don't forget to leave me a rating and review and share this around on social media. Thank you so much, and I will be back again soon.